We switch gears now. We're talking about, you've heard it mentioned a couple of times by our earlier guests about this bank robbery, an infamous bank robbery in Winnemucca. The year is 1900, and obviously the Old West is changing, but there are still some outlaws out there running around. In Winnemucca, a town in northern Nevada, there's a big, fat, juicy bank sitting there in the year 1900, and elements of the Wild Bunch targeted that. Now, for a long time, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the official story, historians believe that Butch Cassidy himself was part of that robbery, maybe the Sundance Kid, but certainly the Wild Bunch was involved. In later years, Nevada historians have cast doubt on that story and said they didn't think Butch could have been there in Sundance because they were elsewhere, hundreds of miles away. At least the records show that that was likely. So someone else would have had to have been responsible. Well, no one else was a good candidate until a new book came out. It's called The Chronicles of Tap, written by Chet and Kim Brackett. And it was based on a stash of handwritten notes by a member of their family that they found in a house. And it revealed some amazing stuff about a man known as Tap Duncan, who was a pillar of the community in Arizona, but who apparently had a very interesting secret past. We're going to get into that story in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. So I mentioned at the beginning of the program that a few weeks ago I had an invitation to a family reunion of sorts in Arizona, Kingman, Arizona. And I had a chance to, it was several families, but the central family was the Duncan family. A man named Tap Duncan was a well-known rancher. He had a ranch in the Kingman area that at one point was 1.4 million acres, might have been the biggest ranch in the whole country. Well-known guy, businessman, highly respected, but apparently there are parts of his past that most of even his family members did not know. My next guests, Chet and Kim Brackett, I think at least we have one of them online, were able to secure a pile of documents written about the Bracketts and about the Duncans that told a much different story, and it relates directly to the Winnemucca robbery that we've been talking about. Kim Brackett, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Is Chet with us, or are we? I'm sorry?
Thank you so much for this opportunity, George.
Absolutely. So let me start this way. Were you at all nervous about going to meet all the Duncan family in light of the information that you're revealing about Tap, who is, of course, a revered figure in the family and in the community?
I would say that we've had a lot of his family members confirm different things to us that they've heard stories throughout their lives, hints maybe, not a full story, but hints maybe of that he maybe had a checkered past, but that he did the latter part of his life. He was a very well respected and honored rancher. He did a lot of really good things in the Kingman area.
Yeah, give me the broad strokes of that. I mean, 1.4 million acres. So, I mean, that's, my gosh, I can't imagine there are many ranches bigger than that in the country.
Well, interesting, very interesting. As you were talking with the Bordens earlier, the Borden family earlier, you were talking about the amount of money that, you know, a ranch may have been worth, or amount of money from bank robbery earlier, and just a perspective that I gained was that we found a newspaper report that when Tap purchased the what would have been called the Grass Springs Ranch, which later became the Diamond Bar, he paid $50,000 plus for it.
Wow. So where did he get that money?
Well, there is a legend, I guess, in our family, and through these documents that we found, that Chet's great uncle Chet had written, that Tap and actually, who would have been Chet's great uncle, and two of Chet's other great uncles, and both of his great grandfathers, may have been involved in the Winnemucca Bank robbery.
Let's talk about the Duncan family. They had this gathering, this reunion. There are aspects of the family. One finger that goes to the Jesse James. Another part of the family that links to the Ketchums through marriage and blood. And then, how do the Bracketts, your husband's family, how do they fit in with the Duncans?
Is it okay if I let Chet answer that question?
Yeah, if he's there, sure.
Okay. My great grandmother came up from Texas to visit her uncle, and she met my grandfather, and they got married. So that's how the Bracketts and the Duncans are related by marriage at this time.
The Duncans and the Ketchums, they all come from this area of San Saba, Texas, and they were like the first settlers. So they were hardy, tough pioneer families who put up with a lot of adversity, right?
That is correct. They were, it was a tough time in San Saba at that time. And see, my great-great-grandmother, Elizabeth, Nancy Blake Ketchum married my great-great-grandfather, Abijah Duncan.
And so how the circumstances, I know it's a really long and interesting story, but the circumstances of why Tap Duncan ends up going to Idaho is it's a tragic story. It's tragic on multiple levels. Why don't you tell us that?
Okay. And his brother, Dick Duncan, took a family down from San Saba down to Mexico, dropped them off, picked up his sister who had been recently widowed in Mexico. And Tap and Dick Duncan and Abijah Sr. Duncan brought the sisters back to San Saba. Meanwhile, the family had been murdered and brutal murder, and they'd been thrown in the river. And there was a hue and cry from the state of Texas and everywhere that somebody had to pay for this terrible crime. And Dick Duncan was a convenient figure to, he had taken them to Mexico, and he's a convenient figure to pin this crime on. So they, using circumstantial evidence, convicted, and hung him for a murder which he did not commit. Knowing that he was innocent, the other family members went down to Eagle Pass, investigated the murders, and investigated the different people down there, found out who had actually killed the family. So then Tap and Jim went down, extracted justice. They didn't bring the brother back, but they did take care of the killers who had actually killed this family. At that time, they left Texas and went to Idaho. Why Idaho? Well, one of their good friends that they had known, Ira Brackett, was living in Idaho in Tree Creek area, and told them about what a wonderful place it was. So they left Texas and went to Tree Creek to live and start a fresh life.
So the Duncans go up and encounter, at the suggestion of the Bracketts, your family name, and then you know a lot of this stuff because of the discovery of these papers. Tell me that part of it.
Okay, the papers, it was in the old house that my grandfather built for my grandmother as a wedding cottage, and then been in and out of been through the family. And then in 1989, I bought the house. And as I was remodeling, I found the trunk with kind of a jumble of papers, mostly kind of loose papers that they were fragile and they weren't real well written. And I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to them at the time, a little bit, but not a whole lot. And then more recently, on the 100th anniversary of my father's birth, we had a family meeting, and we talked about old times and family legends, and then that jogged my memory. And so then I went through these journals some more, and that was when I actually found out all of the stories about how the bank robbery occurred and who was involved in it.
So you find all these papers. They're written by this lonely lifetime bachelor who has a lot of time on his hands, and he scrawls this and he scrawls that, and it's just bits and pieces. As you read all this stuff and kind of put it together, you realize, wow, this is a heck of a narrative here. This is a heck of a story.
Well, it was, and it some of it jived with old legends, I guess, stories that we had heard in the family. Some of it was totally off the wall that we had never heard before. I had no inkling whatsoever that my great-grandfather Ira had been involved in that. He was a well-respected member of the community and just, you know, straight arrow, never do anything wrong. So that he would be involved in it was a total surprise.
So tell us the story of the bank robbery then, what you learned from these papers. I mean, you're not a writer. You're not a genealogical researcher. You're a rancher, right?
That's correct. And the thing is, we did not set out to write a story about the Wanamaker Bank robbery. We were writing history of our family, of, you know, like the murder of Dick Duncan. That was had nothing to do with the Wanamaker Bank robbery. My grandfather getting run out of Denver had nothing to do with the Wanamaker Bank robbery. Anyway, just a whole narrative of stories of the family. And we wrote this story for the family, for the grandkids and the nieces and nephews, just that they would have a sense of the history of the family.
Well, it goes a lot beyond that. I mean, the Winnemucca bank robbery was a really big deal. It's been a story, you know, it was a really big news at the time it happened, and it's remained a big story for a long time. And as you know, the Wild Bunch, Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, various scenarios that have been reported over the years were blamed for it. But from what you learned in these papers written by your relative, they didn't do it. So tell me the story as it's laid out, who did it and how they did it and why.
Okay, it starts with one of the places would be that my great-grandfather, they had a ranch in Texas, but there were too many boys and not enough ground around, so he decided he needed to expand the ranching operation. So he called his brother Jim, or brother Tapp, and who had been up in northern Nevada and talked about how beautiful it was and a good place to ranch. So they went up to northern Nevada, started in Wells, went west on the railroad, and ended up in Winnemucca, where they had checked on different ranches along the way. But in Winnemucca, they ran into a real estate agent who also happened to be a banker, and he found them this beautiful ranch, and they looked at him, boy, this would be a great ranch. They figured what they could do, and then they went back to the banker the next morning and said they wanted to buy the ranch, but they would need a substantial loan. And the banker looked at him, and he kind of laughed and said, the only way you're going to get that much money out of this bank is to rob it.
Which proved to be a prophetic line.
Well, and they said, well, maybe that could be arranged, but no, they laughed it over, and then they went home. And then a couple months later, Abijah Senior, Junior, which is my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, got a telegram and said, hey, from this banker, that he needed to meet with him. So they went to Denver and had a good meeting, and then the banker said, you know, the bank's in trouble, and I've got a lot of investments and a career involved, and I need the bank robbed to cover up some misdeeds within the bank. But, you know, nobody can get hurt, and I don't want anybody hurt, and everybody's got to stay quiet about it afterwards, because if it's ever got out that what happened, then I would be ruined. So they thought it over, and they said, yes, they would do it. So then they had to go through and figure out what people they would get that would be able to help them. You know, there's three Duncan brothers. There was Tap and Jim and Abijah. That gave a good start. And well, then Abijah's brother-in-law was Greenberry Ketchum, brother to Blackjack Ketchum. So, but Greenberry was, unlike his brother Blackjack, Greenberry is very quiet and reserved and didn't flaunt his money and wealth the way Blackjack did. So he'd be a good man. And then they thought more and more that, okay, if we're going to do this bank robbery, we've got to get out of there. And there's no one better a horseman than Ira Brackett. He was you talk about, these were all excellent cowboys. Don't get me wrong there. They were excellent cowboys, but Ira was a master horseman. and he could judge horse flesh, and he could take the horses, and he could ride further and faster than any man living. So they decided they needed him. But to get him to, okay, then they asked him to help. He said, no, not me. I'm not going to get involved with that. But then Tapp said, well, remember, I told you about that deal we did down in Eagle Pass and with my brother's killers, and it just made us sleep a lot better after we did that. And I could do the same for you up in Denver, because, see, earlier, Ira had been run out of Denver, and his brother had been killed, and then there was a reward out for Ira's. If somebody had come kill Ira, then there'd be a reward for him. And Ira had known this, and as such, he had lived in Three Creek under an alias. If this could be taken care of, and it'd be better than money for Ira.
So there was extra incentive for Ira Brackett, as if Tapp Duncan could take care of this guy who ran him out of Denver and who was threatening his life, that would be worth being involved in a bank robbery.
That is correct. Something he would not do. He never would have done it for money, but to protect his life and his family, he would do it.
Let me ask you this, Chet. Is there any indication in any of the papers that you found or the family history that Tapp Duncan had done robberies? I mean, clearly there is a familiarity between him and members of the Wild Bunch, and clearly he had carried out acts of frontier justice. You lay it out. I mean, according to what you've learned, Tapp and his brothers killed the people who had been responsible for hanging their brother, and he had other people that he shot in self-defense. Is there any indication that he rode with the Wild Bunch other than this Winnemucca robbery and held up any trains or banks or anything like that?
Actually, very, very little. One of the things you got to remember about Tapp Duncan, his wife, Ole, was an excellent seamstress. And she, every time she made all of his clothing. And whenever somebody would come by that was broke and needed a coat or a shirt, Tapp would often give them literally the shirt off of his back. And as such, then this other fellow, when he got picked up somewhere else, he'd look in his shirt and there he'd say, Tapp Duncan. So Tapp Duncan got blamed for a lot of things that he didn't do because of the clothing that he had given away that had his name in it. He probably was, to a degree, an acquaintance of Butch Cassidy. And Butch Cassidy had, at times, blamed Tapp for doing some of the things that Butch Cassidy had done.
Butch Cassidy blamed Tapp Duncan, or he dropped his name in some way?
Yes.
Was that a joke, or he did it on purpose to get him in trouble, or it's just some kind of outlaw humor?
I think just kind of humor, mostly. See, the parachute bank robbery in Colorado, earlier they said that Tapp Duncan was buried there. And that's an example of it, of the friendship, I guess.
I'll tell you what, Chet Brackett and Kim Brackett is also there. Hopefully we'll get her back on. We're going to pick up the story of the Chronicles of Tapp after the break. We're talking with Chet Brackett and hopefully Kim Brackett, having a little phone problems, but I think we got it. We'll figure it out, about their book called The Chronicles of Tapp, the story of Tapp Duncan and the Duncan family, an amazing family. That had some dark secrets. They were pretty successful and well-respected, but some colorful stuff happened in the background, including the robbing of the Winnemucca Bank. And the guy who was actually the banker, he's not named in the book. We're going to get into that, who he was, because he plays a significant role in the history of my state, Nevada. We'll hear that part of the story in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Chet Brackett about the Chronicles of Tapp, the book he wrote with his wife Kim Brackett. Chet, in my hand, I'm holding a little keepsake that I acquired somewhere along the way in my research about the Wild Bunch. It is a postcard from the First National Bank of Winnemucca. It's dated 1895, and it was sent to a bank in Carson City. And at the bottom of this postcard, and it's the actual postcard, it's signed, it's stamped by George S. Nixon, cashier of the bank. He's the bank guy. He was also a real estate agent, and in Nevada history is well known because he went on to be a U.S. senator. You don't mention the name of the banker in your book, and I guess you have your own reasons, but I can tell you that here in Nevada, people have long wondered whether George Nixon, who went on to a great political career, was involved in any way in the robbing of his own bank. You want to talk about whether you can name him or whether it fits the bill, or I don't know how sensitive this is for you, but take it away.
Yes, I think it would fit the bill. One thing to remember, there's probably three figures on how much money was taken from the Winnemucca Bank. One was what was put in the paper of how much was stolen. One was what the bank had advertised that they had in on hand. And then another figure would be what the bank examiners would have had. And these three figures wouldn't necessarily be the same. So what the bank robbers got was probably different than what was reported stolen.
So the Winnemucca Bank was in trouble. George Nixon had overseen that trouble. If he is the banker who is not named in your book, he's the guy who figured, I've got a political career ahead of me. It will be sunk if my bank goes under. So he talked these guys into robbing his bank.
That is correct. It would have ruined him politically and a lot of other. I mean, you know, the money probably was not the most issue as the political climate of what it would have done to his reputation.
Sure. So tell me about the robbery itself. I mean, the geography of where things are, where they're living in Idaho and where Winnemucca is and how they would get away. I mean, it's if you have the right route, it really does work, right?
Well, it's approximately 150, 200 miles from Three Creeks to Winnemucca. One thing to remember, there's been a lot of reports about the bank robbers came through Three Creeks to rob the Winnemucca Bank, but a lot of it falls apart. For example, there's the story that the bank robbers stopped and robbed Jim Duncan's store on the way down. The only problem with that is the store wasn't built until the year after the Winnemucca Bank robbery. So there's no way they could have robbed Jim Duncan's store.
So Tap Duncan and his crew, his brothers and Ira Brackett, they pull this robbery off. They go in and it goes off without a hitch, right?
Well, and part of the reason it did was it was very carefully planned. They took care of, you know, all the details they could take care of. For example, no one came into the bank while it was being robbed. Why did no one come into the bank while it was being robbed? Because Abijah Duncan was sitting on the front step guarding the front door so no one could come in and cause trouble for them. Ira, meanwhile, was out back with the horses so the horses wouldn't run away while they were in the bank. And again, Greenberry was a very big, intimidating man, and that was part of the reason he was there, to intimidate and be the enforcer so that everybody in the bank would be compliant and not cause any issues for him.
Yeah, that was a big deal. They didn't want anybody to get hurt in this little deal they had worked out.
That's correct. It was very important that nobody get hurt. And they all went, hey, they all had families they needed one to go back to. So then after the bank robbery, they rode real fast. And actually, that was part of the reason Ira was there. He, with the horses he had picked and giving the other riders guidance, they outran all the posses. Now, the posse did eventually track them back to Three Creeks, but there they lost track of the trail of where the robbers had been. Interesting enough, there's a legend, a local Three Creek legend, that George Moore supplied some of the horses for the Winnemucca Bank robbery. One of these four horses that he had four big gray horses, and one of them turned up lame south of Jarbridge. And after the bank robbery, the other three turned up east of his ranch. He'd reported earlier they'd been stolen because he needed to cover for himself. But
George Moore's ranch was approximately a mile from where Cap and Jim had homesteaded.
Kim, do you know, or Chet, do you know how much money they actually got out of that bank and how much was reported stolen?
Like I said, we've heard different figures, but interesting enough, we do know that when Tapp purchased the Grass Springs Ranch, which later became the Diamond Bar, it was he paid $50,000 plus for it. Don't know whether that was, you know, an exact translation of the amount that he may have gotten from the Three Creek or from the Winnemucca Bank robbery. We do know that Jim Duncan in 1901 built his store, which is still standing in Three Creek, and he went to Mountain Home and bought 7 wagon loads of goods to stock that store. We know that shortly after 1900, Greenberry Ketchum invested in another ranch in Texas, and Ira Brackett, of course, his, you know, the money that he got out of it was that Tapp took care of his problem from Denver. So I don't know, you know, as you put some of these things together, it's kind of interesting to say, I don't know how much money came from that bank, but it sure would have been a lot.
Chet, you were telling me a story before the break about this little joke that Butch Cassidy had played jokes on Tapp, blaming him for crimes that Butch Cassidy had actually carried out, and that Tapp, in this instance, returned the favor. How did he do it?
Okay, when the bank robbers got back to Three Creek, they went down to the store on their way home, and they heard this rumor, okay, there was this robbery that had just occurred. They thought, boy, we rode all this way back to Winnemucca, and the story about the Winnemucca bank robbery beat us back to Three Creek. Then they listened a little bit more, and it turned out that some cowboys had come through and robbed the storekeeper a couple of weeks earlier. So this was, as they thought about it a little bit, they went back that later that night and put one of the money sacks and a couple hundred dollars and a note for the storekeeper that thanks for the groceries and the clothes we took a couple of weeks ago. They should cover it. Thanks, Butch.
That's a good trick. That's a good trick.
So that is, you know, and obviously there's a lot of Butches around, but Butch Cassidy certainly would be an option there. Another part of the thing is when the posse ended up in Three Creek, they would have gone to the store. That's where they, a gathering spot, and that's where they lost the track of all the horses that they had been tracking all the way from Winnemucca. So they would have heard the storekeeper talk about this money, the fact that he had on the store, and signed to Butch, and that'd make a real excellent case for Butch Cassidy was there.
And I think that probably Faraday, who owned the store, it would have been kind of a cool thing. I don't know if it had been cool, but, you know, a thing of infamy that, you know, he had this letter that, hey, Butch Cassidy did this robbery. And I think that he was eager to tell that story because it kind of gave some validity to his robbery.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine if they had social media at that time, that the place would have been mobbed?
Yeah, no kidding.
Kim, let me ask you this part of it. Now, has there been reaction from Western historians to this story? We saw Bob Bozbell there at that event, the reunion that I mentioned. I don't know if he stuck around to hear your presentation or has read your book, but I would imagine there'd be some resistance from those who've had a vested interest in telling the tale of the Winnemucca bank robbery in a different way.
Well, and we have had a sort of a pushback from people as we're telling this story. And like we told you before, George, we didn't write this in any means to tell the story of the Winnemucca bank robbery. We wrote this for our children to enjoy reading about their ancestors. And we wanted it to be some people have given us a bad time about it being novelized. And it is in some respects, but we wanted to put some flesh on the bones of our ancestors. And as we have done some of that, then some historians have discounted the fact that it's a real story. And we have gone to several places. In fact, one of the things that we've heard mostly is that, well, this couldn't happen because, you know, I think Chet referred to before that the tale is that that Butch and his crew came to Twin Falls And then they, you know, or they went to Shoshone, got off the train, came to Twin Falls, and went to Three Creeks. Well, we know that Twin Falls wasn't even platted until 1903.
Huh.
So that story kind of falls apart. But also we've heard from another historian who told a story about, there is a story about this young man named Dick Buttons getting a horse that belonged to the robbers. And as we listened to him, he told a story about, well, if this horse belonged to the Wilkins, who had, you know, were horse ranchers extraordinaire in the Three Creek area. And his story was that, well, this horse, we asked him about the horse's brand, and he says, well, that horse, you know, no rancher would put a brand on this beautiful horse and mar him up, you know. And it's like, we looked at that and we said, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, if you owned a fantastic animal, you're going to put your name on it, you know, sure, by branding it. That's what a brand is for. And then we've had a couple of other stories that, or go ahead, Chad.
One of the things to remember on some of the publicity, Jim Duncan, as part of his career, a little bit later after he established the store and had a bar and saloon in Jarbridge, was also a newspaper correspondent. And Jim had been exposed very much to the power of the press down in Texas when his brother got hung for a crime he didn't commit. There was a hue and a cry through the newspapers, and somebody's got to pay for this, blah, blah, blah. And the Duncans understood the power of the press, and as such, Jim, being a newspaper correspondent, understood the power of the press, and he may have planted a few, more than a few of these stories as part of a cover.
Well, sure. We heard that earlier in the program, and I've read it a dozen times over the years, that about this photo of Butch and the gang taken in Fort Worth, that they mailed it to the bank and sort of were mocking the bank. I'm not quite sure that that's an accurate story. My understanding was the Pinkertons actually sent it to the banker, George Nixon, who then said, no, Butch Cassidy was not one of the guys.
I think that would be correct. What I would be referring to is there's a story in the Montana papers about the robbery. There's a story in the Argentina newspapers about the Butch Cassidy. And this is part of where Jim Duncan, being a newspaper correspondent, could have corresponded with some of his other correspondents and got these stories put in the newspaper.
And George, as we've gone through a couple of these points, there are a few things that we can answer, you know, as we've looked at. Actually, one of the accounts that was written was that Nixon, when he was outside, heard the robber say to a fellow robber, "Hey, Alonzo, get those horses over here."
All right.
As Chet told you, when Ira came to Idaho, the gambler was looking for him, and he used the pseudonym of Alonzo Haynes, who was his brother, was still in Colorado, but he used that as a name instead of signing things as Ira Brackett. He wrote A.H. Brackett. And so we're kind of like, it, and that was one of someone's assertions, that it would have been Harry Alonzo Longabaugh, that, you know, because Alonzo was used as a name. But like for us, we can look at it and we say, well, that was Ira's, you know, nickname. And then,
right,
you know, the thing of Dick Button getting a horse, we know that Bige, who was sitting out in front of the bank, he left a really nice horse sitting on Bridge Street as he was sitting out in front of the bank, making sure no one came in. And his job after that was to help the banker steer the posse to the train instead of, you know, putting together horses and chasing after bank robbers.
Yeah, the banker comes out. I mean, the robbery happens. The banker comes out, boom, boom, shoots a couple of shots in the air or something, and says, "We got to go chase these guys." And everybody gets on the train to chase the men on horseback, right?
Right.
And that was part of the Bige's, was to help the banker shape the posse to get on the train, so they'd be on the train and they wouldn't be able to follow the bank robbers. They could catch up with them. But as soon as the bank robbers left the railroad track, the posse was stymied because they were sitting there on the railroad train. So that delayed the posse considerably and gave the bank robbers additional time to get out of the country.
Then as they got to Golconda, then Bige just got on the Golconda.
Yeah.
Bige got on the train and went to Elko, where he met up with Greenberry a little bit later, and they headed to Texas.
Let me ask you, Chet, maybe this is a question for you. So part of the deal for Ira Brackett was, I need somebody to take care of this bad man in Denver who's threatened my life and my family. That job fell to Tap Duncan. What did he do?
We can't say 100%, but
Well, whoever it was who got the job, what do you think happened? The bad man died.
And the supposition might be Tap helped him die.
Well, I mean, however it worked out, it worked out. As far as Ira Brackett was concerned, the deal had been kept, right?
Yes, the deal was done, and he no longer had the fellow in Denver looking for him.
One final question. It's about the papers. So these are the papers, the notes, the journals that you had found. They're gone, unfortunately. So I would imagine people say, aha, you can't show us the papers. Do you have any of them left, and can you describe how they were destroyed?
Okay. No, we don't have any of them left. Actually, we had them in our house, and unfortunately, we had a house fire that virtually destroyed the house. If you have a question on the house fire, I'll be happy to give you my insurance company's name and verify that we had a house fire.
Okay. Yeah, I believe you. You guys are honorable people. I had a great time meeting you, Chet and Kim Brackett. I love the book, Chronicles of Tap, and I hope where our paths cross again. I want to come up there and see that country.
Oh, please do. We would love to have you come up.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you being here. And I want to also say thank you to Jerry Nickel, whose book Bringing Sundance Home was a good read, and to Carrie Boren and Lisa Lee Boren, Butch Cassidy, The Untold Story. Hope you enjoyed these tales tonight. Thanks to my colleagues there at Coast, Nathan Staten, Michael Cossio, Donna Walker, our webmaster, Greg Bishop, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galante, Chris Boros, our producer. Good night, everyone. I'll be back next Sunday night.